Barakna. She is a principal at our University High School.
Good morning. There's no light in here. I have to remember what time it is. So my name is Johanna Marakna. I'm a high school principal in Ferndale at University High School. I'm really passionate about the subject of SEL, bringing it to our high school students. It's not something that's typically been systemic at the high school level, so I think that's something that's special about our district. We're excited to talk to you about that today. My whys are very similar to Dina's. My coworkers, my students, and then my family, they're always driving me to do a better job every day. And hopefully from our presentation today, you have some ideas for implementation in your own districts, own schools, own systems. So thanks for being with us.
Another rock star we brought with us today.
Good morning. My name is Katie Jeffrey. I am the principal at Ferndale Upper Elementary. So we have our system is K-2. 3-5, 6-8, and then a 9-12 building. I was a high school teacher and principal first, and at UHS actually. And when our district did a realignment in 2016-17, which that's what our data is going to show, is the last 4 years of really this SEL implementation as a result of what was essentially the integration of our schools. I'm a Ferndale graduate. My husband is a Ferndale graduate. And as long as my parents and his parents were Ferndale graduates, and we had this history of segregation in our district. So in 16-17, our district finally did the right thing, integrated our elementary schools into a single K-2 and a 3-5 system. So this was a very difficult journey. So on the left is our staff, our amazing staff from 5 different buildings we were brought from secondary level. To the K-2 up to this upper or down to the upper elementary level. And so part of what I'm going to speak about today is the journey of SEL for the adults as well. It's a big part of what Dina mentioned at the beginning is that adult mindset. My why is obviously also my family. This is Izzy. She's a 4th grader. Quinn, 1st grader. Izzy had an exceptionally terrible 3rd grade year. And not in our district, in a different district. And there is not this system of SEL in where she goes. And so we, as her parents, have really tried to have integrate that into her experience because it really made a difference in her year not having some of those needs met, even though she had all of her home needs. So it was really salient for me how important this is in the schools. And then these are my kiddos. This is our garden club. And this is our, obviously, all of our why.
Our last rock star.
Good morning, everyone. Tom Mace. Before I went into the curriculum and instruction world, I taught high school math for 23 years. So I try and keep that lens, or the lens of a teacher, through as much as the work that I do that I can. My whys, my lovely wife and my son, who's few months away from graduation of college and then unemployment, or you know, I don't know. We'll see. Fingers crossed on that one. So I love to spend as much time with them as I can. Spend a lot of time at work as well. My whys being in the curriculum office deal with students and teachers and principals. So I try and support pre-K through alternative ed students and teachers, support staff, et cetera, et cetera. So that's me.
Okay. It's important for you to connect with us, and we'll connect with you throughout the presentation today. A little bit about Ferndale. We are a little over 3,000 students in 4 square miles, basically, but we have 4 very different communities. We have from homelessness to families that live in quite large million-dollar homes. I know many of you have similar characteristics in your communities. We have Pleasant Ridge, the city of Oak Park, the city of Ferndale, and the Royal Oak Township. The Royal Oak Township is one of the poorest towns in our state. And we have a lot of multi-generational poverty. We have a lot of families who did not have great experiences in Ferndale. We literally just desegregated 2016-17. And thank goodness for our school board. We thought we would have a lot of flight, white flight, and we did not. Our numbers are higher than our enrollment has been in a long time. Our schools of choice we've had to limit because families are coming back. So we're really proud of that work. We do have a large early childhood center. We have K-5 building, a 3-5 building, a middle school building, and two high schools, plus a very large adult and alternative population that comes from many different counties. So we're going to watch a little video about our SEL approach. Here's that surprise. He always looks cute, so you know he's a good surprise. This is his best friend, Jacob. Last year, my son came home crying, and he said, "Mom, I have to get glasses." I'm like, "Honey, you don't need glasses. You can see." And he said, "But I want to be just like my best friend. We're twins." Those twins and I are going to a water park this weekend, so please wish me well. Which all glasses will be lost. So that's a little bit hearing from our students and seeing that in action. Do I have this? That's enough. Okay. All right. If you can hear me, put your thumbs up. If you can hear me, go ahead and put your thumbs up. Now, if I had asked you to feel the room before we got up, it would have been just kind of, Now feel the room just by standing up and having a conversation with somebody you may know or you might not know. So feel that room. What I'd like you to do, and hopefully you can read these, and I'll read them too for those of you who are in the back. And I want you to think about one that resonates with you and share a story about how it relates to you. So these are some work from Dr. Becky Bailey out of Conscious Discipline. Some people might think this is early childhood or elementary, but her understanding of adult mindset is for all levels. She says our brain is not biologically available to store information when in constant stress. Think about your morning routine, maybe. The emotional brain responds to an event more quickly than the thinking brain. Maybe think about a fight that happened at school this week. Controlling and changing ourselves is possible and has a profound impact on others. Connectedness governs our behavior. They say it's the miracle grow of the brain. And emotional intelligence is essential. So talk to your partner for a few minutes about one of those that resonates with you. It might be a sad story, a happy story, a funny story, whatever it is. Go ahead. All right, if you can bring your conversations to a close, but stay with your partner. All right. So who has a story that they'd like to share with one of those that resonated with you? My favorite is finding the keys in the refrigerator. I'm sad it's happened more than once. Anyone have a story they'd like to share? All good if you don't? All right. We're going to do one more. You can stay with the same person or you could get in groups of four, up to you. But people with average IQs outperform those with highest IQs 70% of the time. Brain is pattern-seeking and survival-oriented. What we think affects how we feel, act, and how we feel affects how we think and act. Cortisol impacts our memory, and chronic stress increases cortisol. Go ahead and have a conversation with your partner about those. One more minute. 30 more seconds.
I'm,
And if you can start to bring your conversations to a close. All right, you're going to thank your partner with a fist bump, high five, whatever works for you, and have a seat. So Little Brain 101, if we just took one of those statements every week and highlighted it with our staffs, what kind of rich discourse would come around that? Think about that. Katie's going to share an example of something that happened with her staff.
So the next part of our presentation is about the adult mindset shift. And this final one, cortisol impacts memory, chronic stress increases cortisol. A great example of that for me in our building last year is I had a fifth grade teacher with a student who was homeless. They were living in their van, eight kids and a new baby. And she would sit with the student, and they were doing fractions, fifth grade math. She'd sit one-on-one. Day after day after day. And she came to my office very frustrated and said, I just don't understand. We do the problem. She's got it. She erases her wrong answer and then writes the wrong answer again. And I'm sitting right here doing it with her again and again. 4 weeks later, that teacher's father died. And for the next 2 weeks of school after her bereavement, she could not remember anything. She couldn't remember what circuit was next. She couldn't remember what directions she had just given the kid. And she came back to my office and said, I get it. She is living in chronic stress. She cannot remember anything I'm teaching her. So I'm going to feed her every day, and I'm going to hug her every day, and that's what she's going to get right now. And so that was a huge mindset shift. But sometimes it does take staff seeing it in themselves or experiencing things themselves or going back. We do a lot of trauma-informed instruction. That's not part of this. But how do we help staff to go back through their experiences, too, and share with each other to get that emotional element that helps them make the shift? So that's what we're going to talk about next.
All right. We handed you a blue sheet of paper. And on the left-hand side, it says motivation, goal, foundation, power, skills, and philosophy. And if you look at that or this graphic up here, think about a traditional school. It doesn't need to be traditional discipline model, just traditional schools. The goal was rewards and punishment. And what have we learned? The students with those essential skills, that self-awareness, that self-motivation, knowing how to be social aware, having responsible decision-making, knowing how to build relationships, they're okay with that reward chart. And all of the skills that all of the students who don't have those essential skills, those reward charts start to provide anxiety, feeling of unsafe, I'm not good enough, and then we punish or use consequences. Consequences that may not be appropriate for that child. I'm not saying not to use consequences. Everyone heard me? Okay. So we are trying to go from rewards and punishment to a community model of connection and contribution. So one example of that is in all of our pre-K through fifth grade classes, every child has a job every day. That's their contribution to their class family. The foundation of school was obedience, but what we want to do is shift our students to become their own problem solvers. And they're actually really good at that if we help them with the words. So another good example is a problem-solving mat outside at recess, in every classroom. Are you willing to try again? And you use the words, I don't like it, Jeffrey, when you push me off the swing. Don't do it again. I won't be your friend, whatever those words are, but I don't like it. You want to resolve bullying? You let them have an assertive voice. Okay, problem solving at the secondary? Today you got in a fight. After we have our restorative session, what is most appropriate consequence for you? What will make you learn from this? Our secondary suspensions, if students are still being suspended, but students are not being suspended over and over again. It's one part of the data we don't have today that we just started looking at. Roles, they were on the board. We're trying to build community. What are our expectations? And how do we want to feel? How do you want to feel as a staff? And how do you want to feel as students in school? External control, we know where that's gotten us in education, to self-regulation and teaching students the strategies they need when life is not going their way. This is not about ill-being, it's about the well-being of all of us. So when life doesn't go your way, some of us may jog, some of us may jog to a bar, but we have some strategies, not all good, but think about that. How do we start from a very young age to teach children strategies to calm down and have composure and handle the situation? And then schools were built on rejection, and we're really trying to figure out how to make sure all of our children feel that they're in a safe, inclusive environment with equitable opportunities for them, and that they have a voice in the situation. Rejection, I was born with a serious hearing loss. And I'm so old that we didn't have speech therapists in the schools. And so I left school every week, twice a week, to go to speech therapy at the hospital. And the kids were just brutal about that. In fact, they're pretty sure I was dying, and I think they were excited about that because that motivated them to have some mean things to say, because I wouldn't talk in school. In fact, I didn't learn how to talk to almost the 8 years old. Talk about rejection, and how do we do that? Not that this is therapy, but maybe that's why I started teaching children who had bad experiences. And then we truly feel in Ferndale, if our students can walk across that stage with those six attributes from Dr. Michael Fullan, then we did our job. That their self-worth is not in all A's. Would we like them to get all A's? You better believe it. But if they have some C's and some D's in areas like math? Sorry, Tom. But Tom helped me and my daughter graduate when she was in high school. Right? Well, if your thing isn't ELA, it's okay. So take a moment and just look at your blue paper and write down some thoughts. When you look at that blue sheet of paper, do you think about the things that you would have to work with your staff on in regards to that, right? Are we all on the same page about that right side column? We all bring our biases. We all have our own backgrounds and experiences, and our backpacks are filled differently when we get to a school or a district. But if we want to support children, we're going to have to put some of those aside and decide on a foundation to which our children deserve. And that's very, very important to think about. Sometimes we've had some families that say, my child, maybe he or she doesn't need this. And then I think, when I think about self-regulation, I think about it helps children that have self-entitlement learn how to have self-management and have empathy, right? There's an answer to support lots of different things. So today, Katie's going to share our explicit instruction. We're going to talk about that SEL and academic go hand in hand. They truly go hand in hand. We're not going to go through all of them. We're going to talk about our continuum of integrated supports and how we're building on this. It's not just everyday explicit instruction, but way more, and then some systems of continual improvement to help you. Katie?
All right, so I'm going to share some of our explicit SEL instruction, focusing particularly on the 3-5 modules, just to show you an example, because that's my awesome building. We have from pre-K through adult ed explicit SEL elements in our curriculum, so expected teaching in the classroom. One of the coolest parts about this, I think, is that in the vision prior to the integration of our district, in the 15-16 school year, led by Dita, there was a team of the district psychologists, our social workers, and those teachers who were pockets of excellence in SEL already. So Dina talks about this all the time. Prior to this work, you have them in your districts, there were pockets of excellence of teachers who had that awesome SEL foundation in their classroom. You never saw students out of. They had these great academic gains every year. What is it they were doing differently? So that team of teachers was also part of the process in creating the explicit modules that we're going to show you here today. At the elementary and pre-K, or at the elementary level, we have actual modules. So they're morning meeting modules, 8:30 to 9 every morning. They're sitting in a circle. They're going through morning meeting. There is a topic, or there's a six-week modules. And there's a topic for the week, or two topics for the week. There's a playlist. So I'm going to give you one example of that today, our module one. And everybody is doing it K-5. So it's recursive kindergarten. It's the same week as fifth grade. So they get it for 6 years prior to heading to that important middle school stage. So the modules that we're going to look at, the first module today, but our modules are creating a school family. So that's the first 6 weeks. The second module are brain states. So we teach them, we're going to show you a slide on that. We teach them all about their brain and the work we actually just looked at in our turn and talk. Module three is about growth or positive mindset. Our module four is that we actually move them around a little bit. So we've just changed to executive functioning now. So we're in the middle of that right now. So February, we're circling back to our executive functioning. Then we have character values and mindfulness. We're not going to talk much about it, but we do some really cool. We have a mental health specialist now at the K-5 level, half day at the lower, half day at the upper, because our social workers have to spend the majority of their time with their special ed students, our gen ed students who are in need of mental health support, anxiety, divorce, all of the trauma that a lot of our kids go through. They weren't getting all those needs met. So she actually does meditation lessons in the classroom, yoga, runs groups, and builds that capacity in teachers to build that into their practice. The module we're not going to look at, but I think is a foundation of everything, is our module two, brain states, which is heavy duty. Like, try teaching a kindergartner about their executive state, right? But we have the brain hand, and we talk about going limbic and all these things. So we have explicit instruction starting in kindergarten with what is happening in their brain. When they're having these big emotions, what is going on? And that we want to get, there's a typo up there, but we want to get to the prefrontal lobe. That's the key. How do we stay there as much as possible? And a lot of our trauma-informed instruction PD talks about how difficult that is for students with a history of trauma, or teachers too, how difficult it is to stay in that executive state. We talk about the emotional state, am I loved, the limbic system, and their survival state. Our district also does a book study by Zaretta Hammond. I don't know if you're doing it, culturally responsive teaching the brain. So in my 15 years in education, that encompasses every great PD I've ever done into one book. So if you haven't read it, get it. All right, so here's an example of the modules. And these are actually recently redone. So they were written in 15-16, rolled out via PD with the staff prior to our integration. Then there was feedback from staff all in the first year, feedback and re-PD in the second year. And now we have a committee of teachers at each building to update the modules. So these will look a little bit different than K-2. The topics are the same, but we said, oh, these videos are really, these are for six-year-olds. My 10-year-olds are not connecting. So we now have these building-specific updated modules. And the key to the work, you're going to see in a sec, is that it's not just a canned program. So there is a topic, there's a curriculum, but the teachers have the ownership to make it fit their style. So here's the topic. So week one, building a school family. Can you guys see that in the back? It's kind of small. We're going to focus on composure and identifying emotions. This is the second week of school. We'll talk about the safe center that is in every classroom. Where is it? What does it look like? We're teaching the skills to use these structures. I'm telling you, I have fifth graders who are still struggling to use the safe center, but they know it exists. They can, when they're calm, talk about their strategies because they have been learning this since kindergarten multiple times. What strategies? What do I need to do? And then we have I can statements. So that's actually new. When we started the work, we did not have anchoring objectives. So these are actually on the board with all of our academic I can statements as well each day. The other resource, and these go out in our memos every week, so the teachers have them. The other resource, again, updated by grade level. Here are some books that you can do as read-alouds. We know the power of read-alouds. Here are some books you can use. We have an SEL library in each building. We lay out the books that week so they don't forget. They tend to not turn them back in, but we're trying. We have playlists of free videos, things that they can show that the teachers have found or that we share all staff with, activities that they can do, and that goes for each week. And so some of the things, too, like that we have subscriptions for, like Flowcabulary, things like that, teachers say, oh, my God, this works so well. They put it out. Then we update our curriculum. So that's for every module K-5. At the K-2 level, there's one distinction I do want to make. It's all of the same work, but obviously a kindergartner learner is much different than a fifth grade learner. What they do, too, is they talk a lot about understanding the feelings and emotions, so they use the feelings buddies. They use a lot more of the conscious discipline structures. We use them at the 3-5 as well. But we are weaning them away from some of the actual physical items to being able to do it themselves. And they talk a lot about ways to refocus and see where they are at. What this looks like with emotions at the 3-12 level, Johanna, I'm going to show you just a couple of examples. We are ruler schools. Mark Brackett's work through Yale University. If you haven't been a part of that or read about it, look it up. He is incredible. He just published a book, actually, about the power of emotions or something. We use the mood meter. So this is the 3-12 structure for identifying emotions. Anybody use the mood meter? Anybody a principal? Okay, so I love to use this. Teachers, too? Teachers. So this is a classroom structure, a staff meeting structure. You can use it central office. Central office structure. We've done it at that level as well. I'll show you this little picture. So there are two axes on the mood meter: your energy level, your pleasantness. So the green down there at the bottom is like a low energy, but high pleasant. I'm feeling calm. I'm feeling content. I'm ready to learn. Yellow, high energy, high pleasant. Red, high energy, low pleasant. Blue, low energy, low pleasant. So every day, teachers can make this. So this is an example from a classroom. Some of them use stickies. Some of them use magnets. Some of them use dry erase board. Some of it's on the door when they come in, the students tag. Some of it's the new clip chart. Instead of behavior clip chart, I'm clipping where I'm at emotionally. So after recess, I see a lot of reds. You need to do an afternoon circle. We also now use my secretary, when the students come in, we have a number of students who come in tardy between 8:30 and 9:30. They can select their color. So if a student comes at 9:30 and they're in the red or the blue, teacher gets that color. They know they need to check it. So these little elements, little SEL elements, little slight changes. It took my secretary 10 minutes to change her practice. That make a big difference in meeting students' needs emotionally so that they can get those academic gains. And the one other example we have, like this one, this is an example of the kids choosing and talking about. So on each of these little sticky notes is what emotion they're at. So we're also trying to get them to get those words. Adults are terrible at emotion words. How are you doing today? Fine. Fine. So it's great for our staff as well. We do check-ins at staff meetings. If I see everybody's in the red or the blue after a long day, then I got to do something that's high energy to start. Oh, sorry. We talked about office passes. This is one short video. Just got to show you. These are third graders. And this is about building capacity in them to talk about their emotions. This is their accountability partner around SEL.
The yellow and the green, but because I got to pack my bags today because I have to go to Chicago tomorrow and start driving. And I'm not such a morning person, so I have to see how it's going to go. But at least today I'm not stressed. And actually, the advice you gave me on Monday actually really helped my soul and my heart. And I thank you for that.
Well, you're welcome. And I hope you have a fun time.
I hope you have a fun time, too. And I also like your Sonic backpack. Oh, where's Cuphead and the other? Wait, what's the other one?
So you can see that this was intentionality by the teacher to help them talk about their emotions, where they're at, and to build community. This is a classroom that I see no behaviors out of. None. Because they're ready to learn. They're having those needs met.
Thank you. Okay. At the secondary level, we are also using mood meters district-wide. This is an example of a mood meter actually from my building in a science class. So sometimes at the secondary level, teachers struggle to think, well, how would I fit this into my Algebra 2 class? Or how does this really fit in with chemistry? So this one is from a chemistry class. She uses them every day to, as the students come into the room, they move their little tag. And there are days where all of the students, all of them, are on this side. And so she spends 2 or 3 minutes at the beginning of class just checking in with kids, asking what's wrong, asking if she can help, and sets a tone for them that then allows them to move into that brain state where they're capable of getting some of the information from her content area. And what we've found with building-wide use is that it becomes routine for the students, and it's a way for students to communicate, sometimes in a way that they wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable communicating verbally. But because this is building-wide, and because it's in every classroom, and because everybody knows what it means, it's been really successful for our team. Oops. Okay, so in the middle school level, we also have explicit instruction around SEL, and I'll show you a little bit of examples of what we do in what we call Impact Hour or CPC, depending on which school it is. It's structured as an advisory period, but the content is very different. So we'll take a look at some examples from our middle school curriculum. Okay. All right, so we start the year by having our students look explicitly at self-assessing their own emotions, their own ability to be in a classroom, how they're feeling, can they accurately identify those emotions. Like Katie said, we have students who don't have the range of words to describe what they are feeling. How are you feeling? Sad. How are you feeling? Mad. When really they might be feeling embarrassed or stressed or some other word that they don't have the language for. So we start by just asking, can you identify your emotions? Do you know what they are? And as a team, we work through providing some of the language that goes along with self-reflection in SEL. And that is done through our, Impact Hour, which is a half-hour class period every day at every secondary building. The middle school is using a lot of the content from the Positivity Project, and we also have inserted our own content into that. But some of these right here sort of talks about our purpose at the middle school, and then at the high school we have additional explicit instruction, which I'll show you in just a minute. So we're looking to strengthen personal responsibility. How can we make sure that students are organized, that they're supported, that they have the tools that they need to be academically successful? I'm going to go back to the presentation here. So here's an example of what we would see. I'll just go through a couple of them. I know we're running a little short on time. But in ninth grade, we're looking at character development. We're looking at how to transition into a new school environment. At the ninth grade level, we're looking at what does it mean to be in a different building now? Career exploration. We do embed at our high school level some test prep, which I'll talk about in a minute as well. And then for our seniors, we look at some post-secondary plans. So that's a little bit of the structure from middle school all the way to high school of this explicit instruction. Now, what does the high school curriculum look like? So here is an example of the kinds of things that we talk about at the high school level. So for our ninth graders, our content includes some of the like learning about high school type things that we overlook. Some of the kids don't know how to log into their email account. Some of them don't know why high school is different than middle school, and nobody has explicitly explained why it's different. So we spend a lot of our first semester looking at how do we make good choices in high school? What are the choices that I'm making right now? How are those going to impact me in my senior year and beyond? When we get to 10th grade, we spend a lot of time on stress management. Our students are starting to come more into their own and have a little bit more of awareness of what's going on around them. So we spend a lot of time on stress management, on interpersonal relationships, how to manage those, how to find the words to ask for what they need for support. But we also embed SAT practice, ELA skill builders, and some gap filling. So this is really a hybrid of SEL and academic support for our students. Same thing in 11th grade. Again, it's that hybrid. We have a lot of focus on test-taking skills, but we also spend some time on academic goals, personal responsibility, and those are all explicitly instructed. Our 12th graders participate, we're close to Wayne State's campus, so they participate in a Wayne State immersion program where they have different activities at different parts of the college weekly. So that's sort of the first semester for them, which is a little different. But our second semester, they spend time explicitly learning time management, working on a mastery project for their senior year, and that will take them into their college applications. Okay, so the curriculum is day by day, and one of the things when we started working on this that teachers had a concern about was, I don't have time to plan this. I don't have more time to plan another thing. So one of the things that's really great about our CPC curriculum is that it is pre-planned for teachers, and teachers are just responsible for the implementation. It doesn't mean that they're not invested in it because our whole staff worked together to plan the curriculum. So we got into groups. We said, well, what do our ninth graders need? And we made big chart papers. Well, our ninth graders need this. They need this. Maybe we can help them be a little bit better with cleaning up their lockers. Maybe we can help them a little bit more with some interpersonal communication skills. And the curriculum was developed internally from what the teachers in the building said the students needed. So this is what the teachers receive. It is a week-by-week, day-by-day curriculum overview. So for example, let's go down a little bit so we can see some of that explicit instruction. There's some school-related or how to be a better student instruction, how to stay organized, making sure that they know how to take notes. But then as we get further into the semester, you'll see some examples of, let me just get down here a little bit more, how do we make positive choices? How can I be self-aware? Those are explicitly taught with assignments that go with those. What is stressing me out? How do I even know what stress is? Are some of the things that I'm feeling because of stress? A lot of students have not connected what is stressing them out to their feelings, so we explicitly teach those skills for them. And you can see that every day there's some type of lesson that's SEL related along with a component that's for the students to do, to practice. Empathy, here's a portion right here. What is empathy? How can we be more empathetic? How can we negotiate with somebody that we disagree with in an empathetic manner? So this is what the teachers receive as a curriculum overview. And then what follows along for the students is a week-by-week packet that matches what the teacher overview says. So this would be the packet that the student received, right? So in October, they were working on making positive choices. They were working on self-awareness, how to be self-aware. And the assignments that go along with that are linked to that teacher overview. So they read about it. There's a discussion. They talk about how I could make positive choices. We give some examples of maybe not so positive choices. And that allows them to really see where they need to go. We also, oh, that's next door. I thought somebody was asking a question. It was really loud. we also have worked some with our students on a feeling words curriculum. We are explicitly teaching students the different words for how they're feeling, and that is school-wide. We've used some resources from Oakland Schools, which is our ISD, and we've created a program where different words are taught by different departments every month, and that's really helped our students identify what they're feeling with a term that maybe they didn't know matches that emotion. So some of the integrated supports that we have, and I think you've sort of seen from all the way from our babies up into our 12th graders, we have mental health partnerships in the high school. We now have a mental health center with mental health specialists and behavior specialists at every building. We have restorative practice coaches in every building, K-12. So there's somebody who's dedicated just to working in a restorative manner with students. They have no discipline. They have no code of conduct review. They are solely there to restore relationships between students and between students and teachers. So that's a really critical component of what we're doing. We always are looking for equal opportunities for our students. And then recently, we've implemented AVID, which Dina will be able to talk a little bit more about, at our middle school. So those are some of those structural supports that we have district-wide. I really want to stress how important that restorative practice coaching position is. It's really amazing for our district to have that kind of support for students, because a teacher with 33 kids in the room doesn't have time to spend 15 minutes restoring a relationship between two students during the class. So that's been, I think, one of our greatest accomplishments as a district. It's a combination of both. Sometimes they're referred by the teacher. Because the restorative practice coaches have built relationships, the students also go on their own. And, you know, we have a range of students. Some are happy to go, and some are not happy to go. So it depends on the situation, but both. Yes. Yeah, so in my building, it's second hour, so we have an hour-long first hour, then a half-hour second hour, and the entire building has CPC at the same time, so everybody's working on the same skill. No teacher is on prep that hour because nobody wants a 30-minute prep. So the classes are really small, so there's only maybe 20 kids in each class, so we can get quite a bit done during that half hour, and then the other 6 hours are 55 minutes. Yep. We've also worked on systems for continuum improvement district-wide and really looked at tools for adults. Like, what are we doing to help adults become the kind of leaders that we're asking kids to be in the classroom? So these are some of the types of training or resources that we have available in Ferndale schools. We have our Impact Hour in CPC, which is what I was showing you the slides from before. We survey regularly on school culture and climate for parents, for students, and for staff. All of that is actionable. We spend really a lot of time on a restorative practices mindset. We've done training for the secondary and elementary teachers on ACEs training, so adverse childhood experience, explicit instruction on that. We've also looked at how we can build a restorative practice mindset building-wide. That's through signage, through experiences, through expectations. And that's really impacted our suspension rates. They've gone down significantly since implementing a district-wide restorative practice mindset. We have this intentional curriculum, and then we also use a variety of other approaches that are already existing, RULER, Y-TRI, and we bring those in as part of our curriculum as well. So all of these tools have helped us sort of lead students down the path of being able to self-reflect and have a little bit more time mentally to focus on academics.
I think that those are a lot of things going on at once.
Yeah.
My question would be, like, what would you say would be the best to start with, like where you get the most traction with teachers, with families, with students?
So that's a great point. This was not done yesterday, right? The question was, that seems like a lot of things, where's maybe the best place to start? And this is not a day-long experience that we've had. This is years. Dina, how long would you say it's been? 15, maybe?
A little less than that.
Yeah. Maybe 12 years the district has been moving towards this. But in terms of immediate impact, I think the most impactful is staff training on understanding trauma and understanding adverse childhood experiences and what that means for children's brain states in the classroom.
And I think getting the voice of what your staff wants or your district wants is really, really important. And I also think as advocates around the state, we have to be more mindful that social-emotional learning, trauma-informed practices, restorative practices, equitable work, that's just what's best for our children, and they're not silos. They have differences, but if we really understand that work, we're going to make a difference for our students. Here, I'm not going to go through all of these, but from our school board, we started the cultural responsive teaching in the brain. They were the first ones to start that book study. So they do the book study with me. Then we did our administrators, and now all of our schools are doing that. So it's a very systemic approach to that. And you'll see the words that we're sharing today in our new strategic plan. We recently redid our student and family handbook to really embed these practices and this language into that. Our code of conduct, the blue page that you have is one of our pages of our code of conduct. It's at the very beginning. And that we have to be mindful about discipline is no longer a flow chart, but a web of support. We have a restorative reentry plan, so when students get suspended, because they still get suspended, we have a plan in place if it's a 1 to 3 day suspension, a 3 to 5 day, 5 to 10, or 10 or more. And that's about repairing harm and building relationships. If it's with another student, a teacher, an admin, we're all part of that practice before the student comes back. Intentional practices, you can look at that again. How do we make sure what we're saying is being done and lifting up the work of our staff? And so we do walkthroughs with this intentional practice sheet. And then if we were to go into Kathy's room and we would see something, we will leave a note and say, Kathy, really appreciate that you're focused on the RULER. Really appreciate how you embedded self-awareness into your chemistry lesson. Okay? So it's not a gotcha, but thanks for doing this. We talked about this. We have our daily modules. We have our impact hour. When we started the work at the secondary level, we did not have that impact hour. And once we started teaching the teachers about this, they came to the negotiation table and asked for a seventh hour. Talk about empowerment and buy-in. You're not supposed to cry, but I did. The continuous improvement plans, I would like for you to take a look at that, and I know we don't have time to do that today, but what he was talking about this morning about the theory of action, that is the lead of each of our goals. What's the theory of action that we're trying to do? What are the three big rocks? You can't do everything in a year. So in your building, what are the three big rocks? What are your priorities? And it's a three-page document that everyone gets. Not the 125 pages of compliance. It's a 3-page commitment for all staff, not just teachers. So please look at that. And then one thing I'll show real quickly before I turn it over to our assessment expert is this is in every classroom and office around the building. And so this is a pyramid based on the goal. And it says, these are the expectations of what we will see for all children for behavior and SEL. This is what we'll do for Tier 2 and Tier 3. And so you'll see these pyramids around the building and in each classroom, and that's our reminder of what our focus is and our why. The yellow sheet that you have in front of you is just, we didn't have all of this in writing when we started. We were just doing what we thought was good for our students. But the more people had started asking us questions, we started putting some things in writing. So if you were to look at that page, you could do that with your staff and say, what are those supports that we have? Maybe it goes back to your question. Where do we start? List the things you know you're already doing, right? And how that aligns to SEL and academics and systems thinking. And then go from there. We have realigned our curriculum. We've rethought about honors, and it, and if you want questions about that, we're talking about discourse. Discourse goes hand in hand with socio-emotional learning and best practices. The AVID program that Johanna talked about is an impact hour on steroids, and it's about individual determination, and it's an elective class. We started with 7th and 8th grade, but we're going to have 6th, 7th, and 8th grade and 9th grade. And the goal for that program, that they stay with that cohort over time and that they have enough self-worth to know they can do an AP course. And we are making a difference with that. And that's thanks to Tom.
Thank you. How are we doing? You all right? Okay. Tina, do you have the clicker?
No, I think it's right there next to
the screen. Oh, got it. Thanks. Okay, so obviously this is fantastic, but if we're not getting results, we need to look at what we're doing and revisit. So we've looked at our data, and Dina has shared the message across the state, really, that data should be used to lead meaningful improvement and not just collect it, look at it, and put it in a file somewhere, right? So we're going to lead meaningful improvement and really focus on commitment and not compliance. So our most important measurement is our SEL skills, habits, and mindset. That's a hard shift for a lot of especially secondary folk, right? I teach math. I teach science. So that's I don't have training in that. But we're really trying to spread the word that by building SEL skills in students, the academics follow along really well. A couple of years ago, we basically rebuilt our elementary report card with input from teachers to really make sure that we were capturing the essence of our SEL initiative. And then how well adults, schools, and communities have developed relationships, structures, and opportunities for the adults to learn is critical. And you heard Johanna mentioned surveys. We survey staff, we survey students, we survey community. So we are really trying to stay abreast of how we are shifting mindsets for everybody in the community. So now we'll look at a little bit of hard data. Back at the beginning, you heard that we had some doomsday predictions about our enrollment, especially after we merged our elementary schools back in 15-16. The blue line is our predicted enrollment from Middle Cities. You see that we were predicted to be on a slight downward trend, ending up under 2,000 students this year. I think there was some community perception and maybe a little bit of nervousness. So we did see a little bit of a dip there in 17-18. But once everybody realized that what we were doing was really best for kids, then you notice our enrollment is actually going up. It's going up at a pretty good rate. So we're really happy about that, and we attribute a lot of that to our SEL initiative and the communication to our stakeholders about what we're doing. In addition to our enrollment, we've actually seen upward trends in daily attendance rates. On the left, you see 4 years of data for our K-2 building, and on the right, our upper campus. A little bit of a dip there in the middle, but you know, coming back a little bit. We didn't show middle and high schools because this is really, it's these set of students that have had the full impact of 4 or 5 years of SEL. Right. I don't know if it's been mentioned, but our secondary SEL push really started a year after our elementary push. So this is our third year of secondary SEL at Ferndale High School, Ferndale Middle School. Johanna's building and Katie's former building have been doing CPC for, what, 100 years? About that, yeah. It's not all great. It's not all perfect, but the trends are there for us, and we're excited about that. A couple of slides on discipline. What you're looking at right now are the number of referrals at Ferndale Middle School, Ferndale High School, and University High School. Ferndale Middle School, yeah, we got some warts there. We're working on that. That, you know, it's a process. You don't do SEL for 1 year, one semester, and everything's good to go. It, like Dina said at the beginning, this is our SEL journey. We're still on that journey. Right?
Could have just been a group with a lot of character.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
That was an interesting year. Yeah. But Ferndale High School, obviously, you know, bringing those referrals down, and then University High School also bringing the number of referrals down. Then we get into the number of suspensions at the 3-5 building, sharp decline. Middle school, even the, you know, that middle year, a couple of transitions in administration, but again, the trend is generally down. Same thing with Ferndale High School and University High School. So we're pretty happy about this data. We feel that a lot of this is directly attributable to our SEL push. Of course, we do want to see academic data, right? We want to see that the research is in fact true. So what we're looking at here are M-STEP reading scores for our class of 27, 26, 25, and 24. Notice the upward trends in our cohort data. Also notice that, you know, especially in the class of 2027, which has had the full impact of SEL, the third grade reading M-STEP scores significantly higher. And then third to fourth even higher. So let's look at that for just a second. And then one of our biggest points of pride is that from the 2016-2017 to 2017-2018, our third graders showed 16.4% improvement in the number, or the percentage of students who are proficient third grade reading. So, thank you. That's right, highest proficiency gains in Oakland County. Woo, woo. All right, so at this point, I'm going to turn it back over to Katie and Johanna, and they're going to talk a little bit about our perception data.
We would if we had time. So
I'm still turning it over.
But I'll just speak really quickly to because you have these slides. It is a mandate from our district that we do three surveys a year, staff, student, family, and there's also admin surveys as well. From principals to central office. We have some data analysis. This is UHS's, I believe. You can click on the links later. And we have some examples of the student data, the staff data, and then that impacts what we do in the future through our process. So that's a common process, I think, across districts, but we have been dedicated to that perception data being just as meaningful as that academic data for the efficacy of the program. Anything to add on that? Yeah.
So we certainly hope you got some walkaways today and that you can take back and reflect on some of the stuff we're doing. The one thing we want to say is we want to partner with others. We really want to have these conversations around the state so that we all feel that we can advocate for what's best for our children. We're the ones that need to do that. These are some things that I hear when we've been working with others. Again, I think I said this in the beginning, SEL is not a deficit model. We don't do it because of behavioral issues. Does it certainly impact our response instead of our reaction when we have behavioral issues? Without a doubt. And there's lots of other reasons we don't do SEL, but we really do it because cognitive function is built on emotional platforms. And we're not going to intervene our way out of an achievement gap or an opportunity gap unless we teach our children these essential skills that they need to be successful today and as they grow up. Any questions that you have, again, we truly love to share. We have been learning so much from everyone and opening our doors to let people come in, and we've been going to places to learn about others. Because your journey is going to be different, and it should be different in every district, but the message is the same. Any questions for us? We're here. If you have any questions, we certainly hope you walk away with a little pep in your step and something to do if you have midwinter break this next week or something. All right. Thank you, guys.